This is Macro Analytics, delivering frank conversations on global macroeconomics and market analysis outside the mainstream, featuring discussions and debates between Gordon T. Long, publisher and editor of GordonTLong.com, and his guests. The content of this discussion is strictly the opinion of the participants. It is in no way a solicitation for business, nor is it to be considered investment advice of any sort. Always consult a registered investment advisor before making any investment decision. These discussions are extremely hard-hitting and terribly frank, and parental discretion is advised. Now, on to the show. This is Macro Analytics, delivering frank conversations on global macroeconomics and market analysis outside the mainstream, featuring discussions and debates between Gordon T. Long, publisher and editor of GordonTLong.com, and his guests. The content of this discussion is strictly the opinion of the participants. It is in no way a solicitation for business, nor is it to be considered investment advice of any sort. Always consult a registered investment advisor before making any investment decision. These discussions are extremely hard-hitting and terribly frank, and parental discretion is advised. Now, on to the show.
Good morning. I'm Gord Long with GordonTLong.com. As part of our ongoing series on financial repression, I have Joseph Salerno joining us this morning. Professor Salerno is a very noted Austrian school economist, academic vice president of the Mises Institute, and professor at Pace University in New York. Welcome, Joe.
I'm happy to be here, Gordon.
I have interviewed a number of people from Mises and in the United States and around the world, and I've got positive feedback from every one of the interviews, so I'm really looking forward to talking to you, because you've done some really great work on the war on cash and a cashless society, which I really want to get into. But to begin, Joe, could you give our listeners just a brief overview of your background, the kinds of things you are involved with?
Yes, I'm a professor of economics at Pace University in New York City, and I'm also the academic vice president of the Ludwig von Mises Institute here in Auburn, Alabama. And I also direct their Mises University, which is a very popular conference for students who are interested in learning Austrian economics.
There aren't as many as I think there should be. Schools for quality schools to learn Austrian economics. Joseph, we're here to talk about financial repression specifically. Could you share with our viewers or listeners what your feelings are on financial repression, how you might define it, concerns that you have about it, and is there such a thing?
Yes, I very definitely think it exists. What it is, in simple terms, is a combination of a deliberate inflation plus a very low interest rates. Interest rates that are kept low by a variety of what are called unconventional monetary policies. QE, zero interest rate policy. In fact, there's talk now of actually having negative nominal interest rates. Governments taking over pension funds. A various privileging of government debt as part of bank capital. So it's a series of interferences in the financial markets by governments with the end of pushing interest rates low so that they can inflate away their debt. And they do that by having interest rates that are pushed even lower than the inflation rate, which means that real interest rates are negative. So to sum it up, what financial repression does is to surreptitiously transfer resources, income and wealth, from savers and retirees to the government and its crony banks. So I think it exists, I think it's dangerous, and I think many people are being hurt by it.
Talk to any pensioner and they would applaud what you just said. They know they're being hurt, and in
Absolutely.
A very, very serious way. And these are a group of our society that spend their life saving and putting money away on a prudent basis so they could have a safe retirement, and that's literally disappeared in front of their eyes. But you mentioned the strategy of negative nominal interest rates. Right now we have $5 billion, maybe it's a little lower, of sovereign bonds trading at a nominal rate. Is that a clear strategy that's going to continue to unfold, or is it just an anomaly right now?
I think they're going to try to push it. I mean, we have Switzerland has negative rates, and some of the Scandinavian countries have negative rates on government bonds and so on. So I think that's something that they'd like to push. In the United States, for example, macroeconomists, some famous ones, are calling for negative nominal interest rates. But the only way they can really do that is to lock people's deposits into the banking system. And that's where the war on cash comes in. They would love to restrict the use of cash and maybe even abolish it if they could in the United States, so that people would have to use deposits. So that means that banks could pay them negative 5%, for example. That is, if you have a $1,000 deposit, at the end of the year, you would wind up with $950. But since there's an absence of cash, you wouldn't be able to withdraw your funds from the bank. So that's why they hate and fear cash. And the second reason for the fear is that, as we see in Greece, when people stop trusting the banking system, they begin to pull the money out and the banking system begins to collapse. So locking money into the banks, not allowing people to use cash and withdraw their cash is another way of propping up a very unsound and a dangerously flawed banking system that we have.
And agreed, dangerously flawed right now. But is this war on cash really, and I'm using this terminology, war on cash, really another way, a tool that has to be implemented if, in fact, you do want to push negative nominal rates on interest rates to continuously drive down the cost of funding for governments that are heavily indebted right now? Is that too much of a lead?
No, I think that, that you know, it's a bit of a leap, but I think that that's what the, that's part of what they're aiming at. The other thing that they're aiming at is to get the economy started. All of these unconventional monetary policies, ZIRP, which is a zero interest rate policy, the QE, and you know, all the other policies that were put in place, paying banks for excess reserves and so on, those have failed to jumpstart the economy. We still have an extremely slow recovery, if you can even call it that. You know, our unemployment rate is going down, but the reason is, of course, because people are dropping out of the labor force. We have a historically low labor force participation rate in the United States.
Well, Ken Rogoff was just over in Europe at the finance ministers meeting, EU meeting in Berlin, and he was pitching and talking about a cashless society. And that was part of a presentation and a discussion. When it gets to that level, that it's part of a finance minister's, it suggests to me that there's a strong push going on here to make these sort of things happen. Is that too much of a leap?
No, that's not too much of a leap. That's true. And when the intellectuals begin talking about it,
right,
and then they begin interacting with policymakers, like the ministers, finance ministers, then you begin to get the glimmering of a thought that, look, maybe we can do this. Maybe this is possible. Look, no one thought it was possible under Greenspan, let's say in 2000, 2001, when we were recovering from the 90s, late 90s bubble. No one thought it was possible that Greenspan would ever push interest rates down to 0%, that we'd ever see 0% interest rates, but we see that. And given that, I think it's not impossible that they really make a big push to just drive out cash. They're doing that in a number of countries in Europe. Ecuador now has a government-sponsored electronic money system, which they forced banks to participate in. Now, people are not forced in Ecuador to put their money into the bank. That is, they haven't forced cash out. But the point is that people will trust this more because it is a government operation, or maybe they won't, I don't know. But you know, this is a movement on the part of government to try to get rid of cash.
Now, you did an interview, or actually it was a presentation at the Mises Circle in Stamford, Connecticut, a couple months ago. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but could you just,
yeah.
I encourage our listeners to go to the Mises.org site. It's there and listen to it in its entirety. But could you just share some of the highlights, the key messages that you left with the audience there on this whole subject?
Yeah, well, I started by pointing out that the two things that we just talked about, that getting rid of cash would prop up an unsound banking system, and it would allow the government to push interest rates very low, have negative interest rates, which would then, of course, inflate away their debt and make deficits easy to finance. But What I went through was you know the genesis of all this, and this all began in the U.S. back in the 1970s with the Bank Secrecy Act, which was an attempt to you know fight money laundering, for example. Well, that's developed in the U.S. to the point where now banks have to report any deposit of more than $10,000. But that's not the only thing. In fact, what happens is that if people So it's against the law to withdraw $10,000 or to deposit $10,000 without a bank report. But if you deposit over, you know, there's no known or set amount of days, but over a number of days or weeks or even months, a total of $10,000, $3,000 here, $4,000 there, and so on, then you're charged with structuring. That is, you're depositing less than $10,000. In order to avoid, they claim, the bank report. So everyone is treated as a criminal. And there was an example that I gave. It occurred in North Carolina. A person had a small convenience store, and his daughter overnight had deposited, I think, two separate deposits of cash into the banks. One was $2,000, one was $4,000. He showed up the next morning, or he was called and told to come down to the store, and found a number of different agencies, federal agencies and state agencies, and they seized his bank account. He was told, you know, he was questioned, taken in a back room and questioned, and then was told before he left that his bank account was now frozen. I think it was over $100,000 or around $100,000, maybe it was $48,000. I think that was the number. In any case, he has not yet gotten that money back. I think that's been about a year now. But very recently, he's taken a court. He went to court on it, and there's some kind of agreement in the making where they're going to give him a part of the money back over time. But he committed no crime. They admitted he committed no crime.
He's not going to get it all back.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get it all back.
But he wasn't convicted of any crime.
No, not charged, and he wasn't charged with any crime either.
So what right would the government? Well, one, you have public forfeiture going on here, and like
yes,
at what is going on? Which I have a problem with, of seizing it, but I could sort of understand it. But it says, why wouldn't he get it all back if he was innocent?
Yeah, I think I would direct you and the readers to look and see what the judge's judgment was about this. But there's some funny thing, you know, sticking point there where he's either going to get it back over time or not get it all right away. So he's going to appeal the decision. Let's put it that way.
Now, what's going on with these public forfeitures is, even if you're suspected of some kind of drug solicitation or whatever, they seize all your assets, and there's a huge amount of money that's tied up, and then they divvy it up amongst the various police agencies. Got to cover their cost, of course, and there it's almost an incentive.
It absolutely is. It is. It's an incentive for local police. Oh, that's the other thing.
Right.
About
that's what I would beg CC out of it.
Absolutely.
Good people. But when you have policies like that, it leads to bad things eventually.
Yes. Yeah. No, one of the policies is that banks now have to report electronically every day to the police about large deposits. So this has been the Justice Department has been pushing this. There was some talks given around the country by somebody who represented the Department of Justice on this point.
You know, Joseph, just on this subject, I don't want to beat it to death, but I can sort of understand them tracking large deposits because, you know, where the illicit cash and everything else can go with it. But I know that I have made withdrawals of cash. Personally, I have some troubles with the security of banks, especially with bail-ins.
Sure.
And I was frankly treated, and it kind of caught me as a shock. I was treated as a criminal because I was just withdrawing my own cash. And it wasn't large amounts of money. I just wanted to reposition it. And what I had to fill out and what I went through, it was they were treating me like I was a criminal because nobody would possibly want to have cash.
No, absolutely.
I was shocked. I was like,
yes.
Like, what? It's my right, you know, right. And they want to know where I'm going to keep it. It's none of their business.
Yeah. Did they ask you the purpose for withdrawing it?
Well, yeah. Absolutely. Where I'm going to keep it, why I'm doing this. And it was like, I mean, I'll tell you. And, you know, I basically told them I have no confidence in the banking system right now.
Right.
To that kind of extent. And I want to spread it around differently. But it was like they're being trained to look for everybody's a criminal. That's my sorry to go on, but that was a shock on withdrawals. Never mind deposits. If something is dramatically changing in America.
Yes, you're right, and not for the good. Let me just also mention, about withdrawing cash in Greece. These capital controls that were imposed in Greece, not only are people limited to $60, withdrawing $60 per day, or $67 per day, 60 euros per day from the ATM machines. The banks are still closed, but one of the ministers for public administration mentioned to an Athens newspaper that these also apply to withdrawals of cash from safe deposit boxes.
Precisely.
Yeah, and so this is what you have to worry about in the U.S. because Chase Manhattan now has a new agreement with their safe deposit lessees. And in that agreement, it says that cash should not be kept, or coins, should not be kept in safe deposit boxes unless they have some numismatic value. In other words, a coin collector can keep coins, but you're no longer permitted, according to the contract with them, it's not the law, but you're no longer permitted to put cash in your safe deposit box. That's very interesting.
It is. So, and it's, we're seeing a lot of, let's go to Greece. We're seeing things that are happening today, I think, that are sending very, very clear signals. You know, all of a sudden you can't get into the bank, which means your safety deposit boxes are not, mm-hmm. in fact, what you thought they were, ever mind whether you're restricted or what you can keep in them. But I'm also seeing that, and maybe it's too much of a leap also here, but the ATMs are becoming almost weapons against the people. Now, there can be reasons why they want to hold the cash because they don't have the cash. But all of a sudden, when you can't get cash, you're held to ransom. And the referendum in Greece, it was going to be a yes overwhelmingly. And all of a sudden, when the cash shortages got so severe and food shortages within days, boom, they capitulated. And then certainly the votes reversed dramatically and we got a massive no vote. They were angry. They did not want to, in my opinion, did not want to be controlled by others, even though a yes vote, or rather a no vote, was going to hurt them.
It was going to hurt them, right. You're exactly right. In fact, it looks like, now I don't know if the new Greek counterproposal was accepted. I haven't looked at the news today, but unless they get some kind of aid, the Greek banks will run out of money by next week, run out of cash euros by next week. At that point, they might have to print their own euros, which then wouldn't be really accepted outside the country. There's talk that they may, to extend that period, they may very well lower the amount that you can withdraw from ATMs below $67 per day.
It certainly puts a lot of squeeze on the Greek government to capitulate, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So even though they won a massive vote and a surprising vote, as that money still squeaks out, I look for them to capitulate. And matter of fact, I'm reading this morning in the Financial Times, the mm-hmm. offer that's went back is a capitulation. They've basically taken debt relief off the table, that is Greek government has, and are backing off on it. Now, I can't imagine how the people are going to accept that. But he's looking down the gun barrel here of saying, yeah. I've only got so many days before the people are going to mutiny, and they're holding it to them. So it's not so much just Greece we're looking at. It's this kind of behavior in any kind of banking crisis is going to come home to roost everywhere, as we saw in Venezuela, or rather Argentina with pensions, as we saw in Cyprus initially with bailouts. These practices suddenly become a policy.
Yeah. There was also talk of a bail-in of even small depositors, people who have more than 8,000 euros in the banks would take a 30% haircut. We'll see if that comes into being. But these are insured deposits. They're less than 100,000 euros, so they're insured. It's one thing forcing uninsured depositors to take haircuts, but when they force the insured depositors to take haircuts, I think that's really going to lead to a loss of well-deserved loss of confidence in the fractional reserve banks.
Now, is there a link between the bail-ins and a cashless society here? That the banks may, where the banks really have a strategy? Do they have a strategy?
Yeah, well, see, you really, the reason why you would need a bail-in is because of bank runs. So if you can get rid of cash, they're going to get rid of bank runs, right? All you can do, once you've gotten rid of cash and everything is electronic, where you use your cards to pay, or you use checks to pay. In that case, there's no way to withdraw cash, so the banks don't have to worry. There may be one or two banks that are hemorrhaging deposits as people move them around, but the cash doesn't leave the system, so the government can easily bail those banks out. The problem is, for them, is the fact that we have the right to reacquire our own property that they're really only storing for us. That's what banks are supposed to do. And they can't even do that. Even in safe deposit boxes now, which were historically safe, as we know, you can't do it. Even Roosevelt, President FDR, when he forced us off the gold standard, they threatened to look into people's safe deposit boxes for gold coins, because you were supposed to turn your coins in for paper dollars, but they never carried out that threat.
When we start these processes, they start in a little inch by inch, but within 3 or 4 years, we don't even recognize them anymore as they grow and take on a life of their own. And one of the many things that concerns me about a cashless society here is people say, hey, I use my credit card, my debit card. I don't ever need any need for cash, small amount. So what's the problem? But we all know that if you take your balances too high on your credit cards, the usury fee is just incredibly exorbitant if you get caught in that dilemma. And many, many Americans, people around the world are caught. But what they don't really appreciate is that's only part of the fees. The fees are the vendors that are selling goods to you where you're using your card, they also pay the banks. The
right.
moment and they're screaming at their rates, but they have to do it. But if have to use it to get the credit coming in. However, if it's now a totally cashless society, then all of a sudden the banks are going to put it to those vendors. Those fees are going to go through the roof. They're just going to go up the same at a huge amount. That's another way to drive inflation into the system. You'll see that. Because if
right.
they're paying 3% and 4%, I can assure you they'll be 8% or 12% very, very, very quickly, and that'll be passed right on. So between that and the VAT taxes that they're pushing down the Greeks' throat, there's another way of forcing inflation into the system, knowingly or unknowingly, calculated or uncalculated, that seems to be appearing. Comments on that?
I don't see Greece ever paying off the debt. They're just trying to push this, kick the can down the road. I mean, there's so much debt that Greece has. It's basically doing what the EU and the ECB want them to do, just to get the loans in order to pay off the debt. But there's no net payment of the debt.
Yeah, there's no way they can pay off this debt. There's no way that it needs to be somehow restructured. Last question I'd really like your comments on is
sure.
this relationship. You know, we talk about Greece and separate from America, but the commonality here is Greece can't print its own currency. It's got to depend on the euro. Well,
that's right.
Local, state, and city governments in the United States don't print their own currency either. They've got to depend on bonds and their own financing.
Yes,
and the taxation system, you know, Greece can't really debase their currency, not having one, to get out from under it, and nor can the state and local government. So these are where they get caught first in this debt problem. And the commonality also, it was a pension issue in Greece, and we're seeing unfunded pension liabilities of huge proportions right across the state and local level, where they can't fund them. And we just had a blow up in Chicago where they were trying to use bonds to be able to fund current operating expenses, which are pensions and interest. Are there some strong similarities there between Greece and at the state and local government here in the United States?
Yes, I think there is. And there was a bad precedent set in the 1970s. I come from the New York area, and if you recall, the federal government did step in to prevent New York City from defaulting on its debts. So, and also I think the federal government insures pensions. A lot of pension funds are insured. So we might see that as the next big bailout in the U.S., and that could potentially be huge.
It is. It's in orders of $7 to $10 trillion. And, you know, I'm looking at Puerto Rico right now. It's not getting a lot of press, but that's a very serious situation. And, again, we'll set precedents and send signals. We have to wrap, Joe. Any messages you'd like to leave with our listeners on anything that we've talked about?
Yes, you shouldn't you shouldn't depend on the banks completely. What you should do is you should allocate your assets in a way that you have a large amount of cash ready. Things like this don't just happen in Greece. They can happen in the US. And I think that's an important message. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just the nature of the fractional reserve banking system. It is unstable. Historically, it's proven to be unstable, and we're going to see episodes where we're going to have bailouts and collapses and so on, and you might be short of cash.
Yeah, there's no conspiracy theory here in my mind going on. I think we have generally good people trying to do the right thing, but they're trapped in an unsound money system that's putting them into impossible choices to make, and they're just trying to hold the system together and keep band. But when you put bandages on top of bandages, your options become fewer and fewer. I personally don't envy the central bankers right now or the politicians with the problems that they're facing. It's a very, very tough job, but they're the ones that also put us in this position.
That's right. And they're at a loss about how to get us out.
And I don't think they know have a clue how to get it. So
They
they're
don't.
just
You're
trying to
right.
buy, just trying to, I think, buy more time, hoping that something will happen, or possibly there will be a crisis. And when we have crisis, we reset. And
Yes.
that's when you won't accept something at all in the middle of a crisis, you will accept something because you just want the status quo back at any price. Is that your observations too?
Yes, it definitely is. And you can see it in Greece. People just want to get back to what they had.
They'll give up almost anything and they'll follow almost any leadership that's going to take them there. And our history is ripe with bad leadership coming into the focus at those critical kinds of times. And usually it's because of debt. Governments have overspent, got themselves in an impossible situation. And on that, and we could have a whole discussion about Versailles, First World War, etc., on the magnitude of those lessons. Could you tell our listeners where they could follow your writings, any of the presentations and speeches that you make?
Almost all of my writings and presentations and audio recordings and video recordings are up on Mises.org, www.mises.org. So look there, and for many other writers too, who are very important.
If our listeners haven't been to the Mises.org site, it's a must. You must go there. Familiarize yourself with it. It's a great reference site because it's quality research that's posted. We have to have you back. There's going to be lots to talk about through this year and next year. So thank you very much for coming, Joe.
Thank you, Gordon.
Talk to you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Gordon T. Long, editor and publisher of GordonTLong.com. New recordings are posted regularly and can be found at GordonTLong.com. New show notifications are available through RSS feed, iTunes, and other social networking venues at GordonTLong.com.